Burnaby, British Columbia. Simon Fraser University Campus Radio. Streaming on the internet at www.cjsf.ca.
Welcome to Cancri, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And what a week it's been. Of course, we've had Thanksgiving happening. For some of our listeners, it is Thanksgiving today. For others, that happened a couple of days ago. We're obviously carried at different times of day. And Thanksgiving and really big family gatherings. We're in the season of familial gathering, as it were. It's puts a lot of mental health strain on people during this season, more so than any others. And we'll get into that in just a second. But first of all, Sebastian, how are you? How are you feeling? Tell me about your feeling.
I'm all right. I decided to make a, what's it called? Mushroom ragu, so that I can make a polenta dish. Ooh. And I have the polenta, and I went out and got everything except for a white onion. And you can't make a mirepoix without an onion. And I thought, ooh, I should go back to the store. So because of going back and forth today, I'm
you got all your steps in.
Yeah, I got all my steps in. Also, I've been building furniture. So, I mean, just kind of tired. But, you know, it's okay. These are good problems to have, you know. Forgetting your white onions so that you can make a mirepoix. Not a critical issue to have in one's life. It's not tragic, you know. I'm not weeping. I'll sleep fine. And yourself?
not bad at all. Just been hanging out with family, which has been lovely. And of course, we spent the whole day pretty much looking at gay news so that you don't have to, being both you and, of course, our metaphorical and literal audience.
I've looked at some. I didn't have to. I could have been napping.
Okay, I want to start off by a mental health survey. It was released in the journal JAMA Network Open, and it looked at 9,861 people. It's a Canadian mental health survey that got released. And of those 9,861, 52 of them, not a huge number, but 52 of them identified as trans or gender fluid. Now, it's worth noting, I looked at probably about 15 various studies in the last little while. We wanted to really have a bit of a focused look at academic studies and then kind of bringing you that information. For example, in the Journal of LGBT Youth, there was an article on trans, Indigenous, and two-spirited youth coming together to define their needs and then therefore take action. And it was only when I was really digging through it that I realized it was like six people. That was it. Six persons participate. And it's like, okay. I mean, it is very interesting. It'll help inform the literature, as people like to say. But I don't know if the opinions of six people is really...
I don't know how many times we've discussed a survey or a pilot, or not a pilot. I mean, I would call it a pilot. But yeah, some kind of survey or census or reach out something or other. And then it turns out there's just a half dozen people in it. And I've always thought, you know, that makes an excellent pilot study so that you know what questions to ask when you get more people in there because you did not ask enough people. And I mean, that's one of the issues with something like this. If you're taking a random sampling of the population, you're going to get sampling issues. So, I mean, for all we know, let's say you surveyed 20,000 Canadians. And then you find among them 15 trans people. It is not impossible that you just happen to find the happiest 15 trans people in all of Canada. That can happen. And then, well, no problems. You know, any critical issues with your health or health? No problems. That can happen. Mm-hmm. So if you want to find out something about trans people, you need to focus in and do a study on trans people. But if you're talking about random sampling.
In the case of this other survey, they were looking at Canadians' mental health in general. Like I said, almost 10,000 Canadians participated in this survey. Yeah, yeah. And of those 10,000, about 50-odd were trans. Now, for those who are thinking, wow, that doesn't seem like that many, but I think the census data and other data sort of points to about 1 in 100 people, give or take, are trans.
Well, one that's trans and gender nonconforming as an umbrella. Yeah. If you're talking about like trans, like transitioning, then it is a much lower number.
Exactly. So it's not a huge proportion of people to begin with.
Yeah, 50 is a bit low, but it's not very low.
Yeah. Out of out of almost 10,000 people, to find 52 identifying as trans or gender fluid in some way is a pretty reasonable number.
Yeah.
The researchers, I think they're based out of the University of Ottawa, they found pretty much the kind of data that we have come to expect, but it is encouraging. It is always good to have your suspicions reaffirmed through the collection of data that sort of indicates that that's the case.
Well, sometimes you like being wrong, though.
It's true. I love being wrong. It would have been lovely to be wrong about this, but the stat they found is that when they look at the 9,811 people who were not trans, and then they look at the 52 people who are trans, they found that those 52 people were up to 6 times more likely to have considered suicide ideation compared to the non-trans group. They also found that it was significantly higher for depression, generalized anxiety disorder, bipolar disorder, and social phobia. So across the board, the rates just are significantly higher. Now, is this shocking or new? Probably not. The researchers have indicated, I think it was a great article in the Washington Times about this as well. They say that, you know, there could be a result of experiencing discrimination, of bullying, stigma, the policies that are in place in their employment, in the government, in education, a whole myriad of factors all combining to potentially have this impact. Mm-hmm. But we've kind of known that folks who are trans really have a track record of suffering more than folks who are not. And this is just yet another piece of evidence that's showing, you know, 6 times more likely is quite extreme. But we'll keep an eye on that. And like I said, we monitor academic studies that come through. We love to monitor a Canadian one. We try to give you academic studies with more than 6 people. That's our goal.
Ideally, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I want to stick to Canada for just a moment. It was recently the Truth and Reconciliation Day. Now, for somebody in Charlottetown in PEI, they were not that reconciliatory in how they approached it. There was a lovely woman put a two-spirit pride flag up outside her home in Charlottetown, and somebody came and set fire to it. The family inside the building were fine. Thankfully, the fire didn't go any further than the flag. But somebody felt so compelled that arson was the only solution available to deal with their opinions and their thoughts. So the police, now the lady who lived there, Jamie Lee Augustine, said maybe it's not hate motivated. Maybe they were just having a bad day. The police, however, very much suspect it probably was hate motivated to set fire to a flag. So they're looking into it, and we'll keep an eye on it. Apparently there's neighbors have Ring cameras, there's footage floating around. And it doesn't seem like they were adults either. According to a CBC article looking at it, there are 13 to 14-year-olds who may have been responsible for this particular arson.
13 to 14-year-olds, depending on who they are, they might set anything on fire. Like, it could be not meaningful. It could just be that they saw the same thing again and again and set it on fire. Who knows? I mean, this is what police investigations are for.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, you probably want to look into that just to make sure. This is the kind of thing where you want to be wrong.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, even if those kids were just idiots, and, you know, it does beg the question of about the parenting. It begs the question about what is going on where setting fire to someone's house or a flag and on someone's house is a reasonable course of action. You know, accidents happen, and arson can start with a fire at the front door. So let's take it pretty seriously. Now, speaking of crimes being taken quite seriously, as a gay man,
yes,
I am very much dissuaded from moving to the Waterloo region of Ontario.
That's weirdly specific.
It is very specific, although I'm not thrilled with Ottawa either, and I'll get to that in just a few minutes. Stats Canada has released its hate crime reporting data, and the Waterloo Kitchener...
Why didn't you tell me? Genuinely, you should have called me at home. Like, I'm not even doing this as a bit.
Urgent tax, I think around the...
You should
the
call me at home when this happens. You know I love census data.
Yeah, we haven't... I haven't had a chance to dig through it. I've just seen some of the coverage and response to it yet. Maybe we'll dive through the numbers ourselves and have a bit of a more in-depth approach for next week's show. The CBC is looking into it as well, and they found that the Waterloo region, which is in southern Ontario, has, according to Stats Canada, the highest rate of police-reported hate crimes in Canada. Now, very specific and intentional with the language there. Not everyone is going to report their hate crimes to the police.
Right.
And people are just victims of crime and don't tell the police. You know, maybe the police aren't your best friend and you don't want to tell them. But we implore folks to report it. So that
or
police...
somebody does something and you just shrug it off. You're like, they're just two idiots in the car.
Yeah, they're 14-year-olds setting fire to a flag. I mean, I think that should be reported anyway, because, you know, the potential for things that escalate is pretty serious. So the crime rate, the hate crime rate in Waterloo is about 34 hate crimes per 100,000 people in Waterloo last year. Now, the chief, Mark Crowell, of the Waterloo, said that it, quote, causes great concern for us, end quote. So the chief of police is greatly concerned about the rise of hate crimes. Now, it is absolutely worth noting, about 58% of them were non-violent mischief, graffiti, and those kinds of things, setting fire to a flag, for example. But 40% was assaults, threats, harassment, arson, maybe the flag burning falls under arson. But it's worth noting that although anti-LGBT hate crimes are significantly on the rise, in Waterloo, there seem to be particularly concerned about the spike in anti-Black racism that's happening there in terms of the data. I think it was about almost 50%. There was about 16% of them were... there was also 16% crimes against Arabic individuals, 17% against the South Asian community. 18% was targeting religion. Now, of that, almost 90% was anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
So out of that 18, sort of one in five was based on religion, and nearly all of them was anti-Semitic.
Unfortunately, that's been true for a while.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty depressing, frankly, that that's the case. Now, I bring up not being super thrilled with Ottawa either, because Ottawa's not looking so grand on the list. Hate crime rates, Kitchener-Waterloo is up there. Peterborough, very close behind. Very, very close behind Kitchener-Cambridge-Waterloo, followed by Ottawa-Gatineau. And then it's a bit of a drop-off, and then we get to Kingston. And all of these are Ontario towns, by the way.
Yeah, I noticed. I was wondering, are you just looking at the Ontario data? That's weird.
Because what are we looking at? 1, 2, 3. Fifth place, Halifax in Nova Scotia. Back to Ontario for Hamilton, London. Then we're in Saskatoon. Then it's Toronto. Then Sudbury, Vancouver, Chilliwack, Quebec City, Abbotsford, Victoria, Moncton, Thunder Bay. But Ontario really pulling out all the stops when it comes to hate crimes against the LGBT community, against the Jewish community, against Black folks, and against South and East Asians as well. Not something to be proud of.
Libertarians report it more, which is possible?
Yeah, you know, you're right. The caveat of it being reported hate crimes, maybe no one in Alberta reported it, potentially. Maybe Calgary is a hotbed of anti-Semitism, but nobody has said boo to the police. That could be the case. It's probably unlikely. It is quite likely. I mean, it's reasonable. What is it? Occam's razor, you know, where it is the most obvious solution is that there are just
the
more.
Solution that requires the fewest assumptions.
Exactly. That, you know, the highest rate of hate crimes are in Waterloo because the highest number of them are in Waterloo. I mean, it's not a bold statement to make that jump.
I mean, I Googled it while you were talking. Because of course I did. And I found the Canada-wide numbers. Like the Canada-wide numbers 2023, sexual orientation 2020, I said that, was 860 events in total countrywide for the whole year. Now, I mean, compare that to 2019, where it was 265 events for the whole country for the whole year. That is almost a threefold spike. Mm-hmm. But that's still not... I mean, considering the population of Canada, especially the growing population of Canada, 860 is still moderately low, but the fact that it has tripled, that is very concerning. So it's not like there's, you know, a lesbian getting run over by, I don't know, dogs every day. You know, it's not like, I don't know, I was trying to think of something that you can say on the radio that isn't awful. People, houses aren't being burned down every day. And, you know, like we're not having gay men pulled out of their cars or something like that every day. Like it's still moderately rare. This is like maybe twice a day in the entire country. And this is including just things like hate speech. Like somebody says a bad thing to someone they don't know. And I don't want to downplay it too much, but I also want to avoid fear mongering because there's enough of that in the media already. But yeah, it's not great. There has been an increase across the board in all categories, though, which is pretty weird.
Well, I would like to compare that to the annual data that came out of the British government. Okay. So they also released their annual hate crimes data just recently. Mm-hmm. And it is encouraging that in Britain, at least, hate crimes are down in total by 5% for the second year in a row. They've dropped in terms of the rate of hate crimes in Britain, which is great. Now, most of those are actually racially motivated in Britain. Mm-hmm. A lot of racism leading to hate motivated crimes in Britain. About a quarter of them are religiously motivated. Significant amount of anti-Semitism happening in Britain as well. But the number of hate crimes against the LGBT community also decreased for the second year in a row. I think it was a couple of percentage points that it dropped by. It's worth noting that who makes up the body of the hate crimes? Like, is it the lesbians being particularly targeted? You know, is it all people setting their dogs on the lesbians, to use your example a little earlier? Or
I was on the spot. Give me a break.
It's true. It's hard to come up with a non-shocking hate crime example under pressure. But I did want to say that in Britain, the sort of the focus of hate crimes in the gay community or queer community, I should say, has moved. So in the last 10 years, the percentage for hate crimes against trans people has tripled.
Okay.
No, it's gone. It now makes up about 3% of all hate crimes in Britain, where it was obviously a tenth of that 10 years ago in Britain. Now, of course, the public consciousness around trans folks, the debate around trans folks, the legislation, every time J.K. Rowling opens her mouth, you know, all of these things contribute to the sort of the who bubbles to top of mind when you're being hateful and criminal. And yeah, so it kind of it changes that way. But will I move to Waterloo? Just like the chief of police, I am also greatly concerned about the rate of hate crimes. More importantly, I'm pretty disappointed in Ontario, which is across the board dominating the charts when it comes to people committing crimes motivated by hate. Definitely not something to be thrilled with. You looked into it. What are the crimes? What's the top 10 criminal activity by hateful people?
So, I mean, the number one category is mischief, which is the legal term for messing with your stuff. So all the times when people stole a flag.
Oh, deface the sidewalk.
Deface something, vandalize something, stole a thing, knock something over. That's that court category. And that's about half of the events fall into the heading of mischief. And then the next two ones is uttering threats. And then third is assault one, which is spitting, shoving, maybe hitting with an open hand. I cannot remember the distinction, but I do know, like, when you get to number two, that's, you know, weapon or bodily hard. So that's a little bit more aggressive. So your sort of low-level violence is the third category, which is not a good thing. I mean, thankfully, there's no homicide. Unfortunately, there were 10, but which is a pretty low-level one. But yeah, it's mostly mischief. It's mostly people messing with your stuff, which isn't great. A lot of it has just been, I mean, in the gay news, at least, it's been flags being stolen or defaced or spray painted on or something. So again, you know, not the kind of thing that's going to break the bank. We're not talking about people totaling your car, but it is upsetting to have that kind of thing happen to you, for sure.
All right, we're going to jump to our first track of the day. This is Younger Than by Van Camp, and we will be back just after this.
It's a fallout. can make it all make sense.
And welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
Now, the Australian Institute of Criminology. I don't know if they roll the R in quite the same way, but the Australian Institute of Criminology, they had some research that found 3 in 4 dating apps or websites that users were using had experienced some form of sexual violence through the platforms. Now, that's a pretty astonishing amount of sexual violence that people are experiencing.
How do you get violence through the platform? Or like,
you meet up with someone and it's horrific, and you know what I mean?
It was facilitating it. Okay.
Exactly.
I thought you meant like, while using the app, like a fist comes
like,
out of your
like
phone.
Like Tinder just swipes you back, and it's it's not.
No. Okay, using apps as a facilitator.
Grindr just weighs you down. I've got puns for all of these, but I'm practicing the dad joke of the year. All right. So the Australian Institute of Criminology releases a pretty shocking data that for users, 3 in 4 dating app users, which is what, 75%? That's a huge proportion of people who are using these dating apps had experienced some form of sexual violence. 75%, that's 3 out of 4, astonishing number of users. They were like, we need to do something. Yeah. And what's happened is the Australian government has created a code of conduct that all of the dating apps now have to agree to.
Okay.
There are a few different things in place. They have to, you have to be able to escalate the complaints to the police. So if something drastic happens, you don't just, you know, click a button and it goes into the ether and is never seen again. And an algorithm maybe looks at it if you're lucky. You know, it has to be transparent. The reporting mechanism needs to be prominent. It needs to be clear how to report people. And they have to take seriously how to detect instances of online-enabled harm. And some people who are responsible for this outrageous conduct there has to be a mechanism for them to be removed, a mechanism for them to be that those complaints against them to be escalated to the police. Mm-hmm. And also, as an industry, they're going to be rated. So if dating app Lamps Are Us, I'm looking at a lamp, that's what I thought of it. You know, people who love lamps, the lamp-loving community.
It would be Lamper with 2 R's and no E.
You know, those live-action role-play folks are pretty pretty handsy, if you know what I mean. Those are LARPing, aren't they?
A lot of the dating apps have a pretty formulaic name. It's just a deliberate misspelling of a common word quite often.
Exactly. Lamp with 4 P's. There we go. That's really... Anyway, so let's say there's a dating app and they've signed up to this code of conduct, but they haven't really done anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you're reporting someone is still buried, you know... The harassment is still there. The people are not being removed when they're doing this misconduct. Essentially, the new rating system will allow you to look at the apps across the sector, and then you're like, "Oh wow, that lamp app, it's pretty shoddy. They're not really proactive in preventing this online enabled harm or reacting to this online enabled harm." However, Tinder, top marks. You know, it'll hopefully motivate the apps to take it seriously because people will be able to shop around and choose the apps that make the most sense. Now, the ones that have signed up to it include Grindr and Match Group and Bumble. So the Match Group, they own Tinder, Hinge, OkCupid, Plenty of Fish. So all the big dating apps have all agreed to this code of conduct. And I suppose the hope is that in Australia, at least, this will motivate some better behavior.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't just motivate better behavior from the users of the